Good evening, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. Lovely to see each of you. I think Hoko is away on a trip, and Mara may be joining us later this evening. Can everyone hear me all right? You feeling good? Okay. All right, thanks so much. I was reflecting this morning as I sat at a job where there was a lot of downtime. And I was doing a lot of informal meditation. That I seem to have, at least seemingly, infinite work to do right from where I stand, right from where I sit. With regards to how I hold things in the mind. So that was one of my reflections today. That my practice of the moment seems to be to return to the present, and then notice what the mind's up to. And how I'm holding things. So for me, this brings me back to the three poisons. So the way I see the three poisons is that the poison of ignorance is at the base. Because, well, there's two ways people talk about or think about the poison of ignorance. One is that it's a kind of going unconscious ignorance in the sense that I'm going to plug my ears and my eyes and stuff. My understanding is that's actually not the kind of ignorance we mean, but it's a good thing to talk about too, going unconscious part. So, when we talk about ignorance as one of the three poisons, it's specifically ignorance of the way things are. It's that we're not seeing clearly. Our minds clouded, our views clouded in some way. And because of that, the other two poisons arise, which are anger or aversion. That's one of them. And the other one is greed or desire. Right. So wanting more or wanting less, right? Something different. So in our ignorance of the way things are, I think we fundamentally have these impulses that are trying to get things right by pushing the right things away and getting the right things to come towards us. So even when we talk about the five hindrances, we can see these all as manifestations of greed or aversion. So desire, obviously greed. Anger, obviously aversion. Okay. Restlessness is a form of aversion. Sloth and torpor, again, as I'm framing it here, is a form of aversion. Falling asleep rather than facing whatever it is. Skeptical doubt. That's an interesting one. Where does that fall? Here's my thought about that in the moment. With skeptical doubt, it seems to me that there's either greed, some flavor of greed, or some flavor of aversion underneath this mind that is throwing up doubt. So when we talked about skeptical doubt, it's not the positive, great questioning that we want to cultivate, the curious mind. It's not that kind of doubt. But it's the one that might think, maybe this teacher, they're not good enough somehow. Like after doing the, you know, investigation and saying, yes, this is someone I want to study with. You know, I don't know, you know, that. Or maybe, and I want to say here, like, skeptical doubt is tricky because sometimes that's just discernment, right? Sometimes we're really seeing something. But maybe this teacher or maybe this community or something like this. Or this practice of Zazen even, you know, that I thought was really working for me. Maybe it's that. So that kind of doubt, is a hindrance to practice, obviously. And it seems to me that aversion or anger could be under it, and greed could also be under it. So assuming that this doubt is arising and it's different than healthy discernment, it has a different flavor to it. And sometimes that's super hard to tease out. The old, should I stay or should I go, right? Sometimes that's hard to tease out. But it seems to me these thoughts could come up in the mind when I'm not wanting to take on the assignment or the feedback or the karma that's right in front of me in my body mind. So in this case, aversion underneath those thoughts. And then the thoughts come on top. You know, he, she, they don't like them. You know, they're wrong, they're bad, they're not good enough for me. Okay. And that also, those thoughts could come on top of greed. Maybe I joined a community or a spiritual practice and was looking for some romanticized idea to happen, maybe some affirmation or even empowerment or fame, or I wanted my friends to think I was cool. I do Buddhism, I do Zen, you know, and my friends didn't think I was cool, so, right? I didn't get the whatever the greed was underneath. So let's see. So I personally have this infinite work to do, noticing how I hold things in the mind, noticing when these deluded impulses are clouding my thinking. And you know, for me, I've shared before, what I most often notice is some sort of aversion. You know, when I'm really sensitive or trying to concentrate on something, I can get to a place where every kind of noise makes me mad. So if someone else is making that noise, they better watch out. because I might get angry. Anger's the quickest, right? Between impulse and it coming out the mouth. Yeah, it's the quickest. It's the quickest, and it's already out my mouth, and I'm like, oh man. But it's not that noise out there, huh? So what I really want to do, when I'm feeling this anger or aversion, is hold it. Is hold it in a big container. Hmm? So that it can be in my universe, right? I'm not trying to get it out of my universe, right? And of course, if I also need to go talk to somebody, you know, politely about quieting down or something, there's skillful ways to do that. But I have to wait until the nastiness settles out, huh? Sometimes. And because I see so much delusion in my mind still, I assume it's there for others. So I think that in addition to this practice we have, this beautiful practice of simply returning to the present, it's nice to have maybe another thing or two that we can pick up for the mind to return to a kind of medicine. Kind of medicine. So there's various practices or even words or phrases people can pick up as a kind of mantra during the day as a touchstone. So one that, here I'm transitioning to my theme of questionable wisdom versus pure wisdom. and I'll get to what I mean by that here in a second. Some words or practice suggestion that resonate with our deep clarity about what's true, about how things really are, about the direction that we want to turn the mind, about the kind of mind we want to cultivate. So for instance, at the monastery, at one point it was suggested that people take on a smiling practice. So being present, yes, but then adding, changes the mind, right? Changes the mind. So that would be an example. It might be especially appropriate for someone or any of us in a time where we find ourselves in a dour mood. Maybe the thoughts aren't even clear in the mind. Oh, just see. So here's a further point about that. So when we practiced this at the monastery, some people got angry. Right? And I've heard this also when the smiling practice has been introduced other places. And they said, well, I'm not gonna do this, it feels fake. It feels fake. I don't feel happy right now. So no, I'm not gonna be fake. I'm gonna be real. Interesting, huh? Sometimes our aversion gets in the way of taking medicine that might actually help us. Yeah, it might actually help us. And sometimes when there's an aversion like that to a suggested practice, especially if the suggestion is coming maybe specifically to us from someone we trust, sometimes that reaction is indicative of like where we need to look, right? And see whether this is really the trusted person who's full of it, or just somewhere we might need to look, or some medicine we might want to take anyway, even though it's super uncomfortable. Even though it's super uncomfortable. Sometimes the medicine can feel like poison because it can be uncomfortable. You know, we're transforming the mind. We're transforming the mind. Smiling practice is usually pretty comfortable for me, but, you know, everybody has their own karma. So sometimes it's uncomfortable. So if we can take it in anyway, if the practice or whatever we're taking on really resonates with our deep knowledge of what's true. Sometimes certain practices or koan study can feel like ingesting poison because it's uncomfortable. And sometimes it can feel like that because it's actually poisonous to the superfluous ego. Hakuin's, Zen Master Hakuin's commentary on the Heart Sutra, you know, translated into English, originally came out titled Poison Words for the Heart. You know, Hakuin's whole teaching personality was often critical, harsh, wrong, stupid, you know, kinds of language. Oh, you think that? Bah! Spouting nonsense again, that kind of stuff, right? This commentary recently came out under the title, you know, when translated into English, Poison Words for the Heart. And I've noticed now that you can only find it titled Zen Words for the Heart. Interesting. Another thing I was contemplating today, you know, the whole thing, you know, I opened it again as a kind of rant against spiritual materialism, really. And then the publishers didn't really think we could handle the word poison, I guess. It's kind of funny. I bet it sells more books, though, so I don't know. Maybe Hakuin would be happy about that, his words getting out there more. I don't know. I don't imagine so. I imagine poison words for the heart might be more what he meant. More what he meant. Mantra or practice suggestion that's come my way lately is I've learned that there was a female Zen master named Sono, who, as the story goes, when approached by really anyone with any question, so, hey, great Zen master, give me a practice to help calm and clarify my mind, or like, my leg hurts, can you help me fix this?
I don't understand what all problems, but different kinds of problems people would bring to her. And I also don't get in the story how the word hadn't already got out at some point, but to each person coming forward, or question coming forward, even from her students, she would sometimes say, well, here's your practice. You just repeat this mantra or assertion over and over again, over and over again. And it is, thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. Thank you for everything. I have no complaints whatsoever. And for people who were able to take this on, maybe after some initial like reaction, maybe they were hoping for something different, actually take this practice on, it worked. You know, it helped them, whatever they needed, including, you know, the person with leg pain, shoulder tension, you know, the physical ailments. Or even, I think, you know, more serious physical ailments. So this is the story. But of course, some people weren't able to take the practice on. They were just very, very mad at her to dare suggest such a thing, right, would help them. So I've been experimenting with this practice. I'm very early on in it, and I know that because my tone of voice is still all wrong. So it's still got like this eye roll. Yeah. Like, thank you for everything. I have no complaint whatsoever. But then, like, you know, I'm kind of begging you to ask me about what my complaints are. Because, you know, work was hard, et cetera, right? So there's another example of a, you know, that's a practice that resonates with me. It doesn't seem like, it seems like those words direct my heart mind, which I feel through the body and beyond, right? Direct my heart mind where I want to go. Towards clarity, towards compassion. So yes, let's take on this practice some more, I say to myself. My teacher self says to my practitioner self, right? My great physician self says to my ailing self. Well, let's prescribe this practice. And my ailing self says, yes, I'll take on this practice. It's always such a relief when I suggest something to someone, like in a one-on-one interview, and they say, yes, I'm willing to take that on. I'm going to take that on. I'm going to look into that. Thank you. Yeah? Thank you. And then you look into it until it's time to work on a different edge. Another place, a little different edge I found is with poetry. And I didn't bring in an example, but I'll just say that certain phrases kind of call me to that bigger place, that wiser place, that place that's more connected with realities of impermanence, suffering, no self. non-ignorance. So I can use the poetry. Sometimes I read poetry and I just can't handle too much of it. It feels too intense for me. I'm one of those people, though, that can easily feel like it's too intense. But to stretch myself, with a phrase maybe even returning to that phrase as a practice. Can I hold this, let this be part of my awareness as well? I mentioned earlier that I talk about questionable wisdom. You know, it can come from anywhere, but I've been dying to talk about the Dove chocolates lately. Yeah, Michael's laughing, Mara's laughing. Mara was recently living with us, visiting us. So there are these single serving, foil wrapped Dove chocolates. You can get them in a bag, and you open them and they have quotes on them. Yeah. So wise words, maybe. And it looks like they've taken them from all over the place. I don't know, maybe people send them in or something. They are more often questionable than not, to the point that it's pretty hilarious. Yeah. Some of my favorites that come to mind. Breathe in the future, inhale the future, exhale the past. Yeah. I don't recommend that, as a practice, right? Yeah. Here's another one. Make your past self jealous. So it just doesn't seem like the way I want to turn my mind, right? So you can check these things against your own wisdom, right? So I also do not recommend having an antagonistic relationship with your past self. No, that's you. Or trying to inspire jealousy in anyone. Okay, here's one more. But really, like, most of them, I'm like, no, there's something wrong with that. Compliment someone, you'll feel even better than they do. So, Dove chocolates, folks. Yeah, they should pay me money. Because, yeah, I might post this talk, and I am encouraging people to buy Dove chocolates. That's probably not a good source for mantras to take on. Look at myself challenging myself to give a full 20-minute talk and going over. Good job, Kojin. Yay. One more, I think, at least. So not from the Dove chocolates. I'm going to move on from there. But really, like the something to return to during the day. Especially as I'm presuming that we're all dealing with a fairly deluded mind that likes to go off directions that, we ultimately don't want to be going. So we've got this potential practice, thank you for everything, I have no complaint whatsoever, right? So this is a kind of mantra. So this reminds me of so we chant the Heart Sutra in Japanese right now for morning sits, but in there's a mantra suggested as part of that sutra, right? It says, the great mantra, the miraculous mantra, the best mantra, the unsurpassable mantra. It removes all suffering. It's true. It's not false. Right? Just like Zen Master Sono is saying. And she says, this is, thank you for everything. I have no complaint whatsoever. Huh?
It works. It's not false. It removes suffering. It's the best. Okay, and then in the Heart Sutra, this mantra that is the best and removes suffering, it's another option, is gate gate, para gate, para sam gate, bodhisvaha. I'm just going to throw that out there for contemplation, because I've given a kind of long talk tonight. So this is generally translated, or I've heard it translated as, gone, gone, gone beyond, gone to the other shore, enlightenment. Ah. Okay. Interesting. So as a mantra, something we'd say over and over again. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone to the other shore. Huh? Where's the other shore? Anywho, all right. That's going to be it for tonight, probably. Hang on. Do, do, do. Yep. All right. Thank you so much. Go ahead and close this portion by chanting the four principles of practice. Of practice, caught in a self-centered dream, only